The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On the east side of Manhattan, in a gilded but tacky dump, a guy from the sticks was working as a fixer for a con named Donald Trump. Well, he lied, broke laws, and threatened whatever his boss asked him for. He once took the blame, but now he's clearing his name, and he's not protecting Trump anymore. 'Cause he's mad, mad Michael Cohen. He knows how far the crimes are going, like inflated charity bids, and he's got dirt on those complicit kids. When the feds raided Cohen's office, they found evidence a mile high. First Trump made a fuss, then threw him under the bus, claiming he barely knew the guy. Cohen flipped and is working with Mueller, so he got slammed by the GOP. But their attacks backfired, turned out they'd hired him to work for the RNC. Yeah, he's mad, mad Michael Cohen, and the case against Trump is growing. Payoffs for sleazy sex, we've even seen the canceled checks. So he testified before Congress, and Republicans were intent on calling him a liar, but Cohen's reply was, who, me or the president? Lies about Trump Tower, Moscow, those financial statement tweaks. And there's not a chance Trump didn't know in advance about the tricks by WikiLeaks. Yeah, he's mad, mad Michael Cohen. Now Trump is reaping what he's been sowing. Cohen's naming names and dates, despite that stupid tweet by Matt Gaetz. Oh, he's mad, mad Michael Cohen. So much juicy stuff's been flowing. The line that everyone will repeat: Trump is a racist, a con man, and cheat.
Oh, yeah.
A ton of crimes have been done that all begin with individual one. And now that we've had our first look, I hope that Cohen really does write a book.
Oh, yeah. That is, well, let me get this. That's Lauren Mayer. People, for some reason, keep confusing Lauren Mayer with Gotta Laugh. Gotta Laugh doesn't do parody songs. When I play these songs like that, that's Lauren Mayer, Lauren's comedy on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. She's great. She does one of these songs each week, and they're timely and topical and spot on, and a good way to start a Friday. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, and unfortunately, my Friday got off to a bad start. I woke up at my usual 2 o'clock in the morning with just a wicked sore throat. And then after taking some Advil and tea, I fell back asleep around three or so. When I woke up this morning, not only did I have the sore throat, I've got the headache. So the only good thing that I can say is at least it's Friday. So I have 3 days to hopefully rest and recover. I have made it through the entire winter. Today's welcome to March, everyone. Today, of course, I get sick. So I'm going to fight it off. It's the power of positive thinking. I'm going to do my best to not be sick for next week. Because I'll tell you what, Nick, I was hoping my friend Jason Leopold would have a few minutes to join us today. Unfortunately, Jason threw out his back and spent the whole morning in the chiropractor's office. So Jason is going to join us on Wednesday. And what my door is always open for Jason Leopold these days, of course, writing for BuzzFeed. But he's just one of the best journalists, I believe, working today. And Jason Leopold was smeared unfairly about 6 weeks ago when he and his partner in journalism, Anthony Cormier, published a story at BuzzFeed with the date was January 17th. And the headline read, President Trump directed his attorney, Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress about the Moscow Tower project. Isn't that interesting? Now the New York Times is reporting, you know, kind of the same thing, and without giving credit to Jason Leopold. I like to give credit where credit is due. So I believe that Jason and Anthony have been vindicated, even though, BuzzFeed always stood by the story, as they should have. And they continue to do amazing work. So Jason will be, he's also reported tons on Felix Sater, did an interview with him. So he's really on top of all the, you know, stuff that's going on, and not 6 weeks later when the New York Times decides to print the story. Anyway, there's a lot of news today. I figured because this week has been crazy, who would I like to do the end of the week today with? Boy, that was said very clumsily. There was no one I would rather discuss this insane week in world history with than the awesome Heather Digby Parton. Heather Digby Parton, of course, better known as Digby, has been blogging since the early days of political blogging. She's like the grand dam of liberal political bloggers from her hullabaloo blog at digbysblog.blogspot.com is where you can still find it. Of course, she also writes a column at Salon. And she's just one of my favorite people to talk to. So Digby will join us in the second half of the show to talk about the week that was. Somebody just posted Beto O'Rourke at last night's Metallica concert. Really? Why is that news? I don't know. Anyway, I'll do my best to get through what's news. Hopefully my voice will hold up because, as we're wont to do, we'll do it live.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So another day, another bombshell report about Donald Trump. This time the New York Times is reporting that Donald Trump ordered his then chief of staff, John Kelly, to give his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, a top secret security clearance despite serious concerns flagged by top officials. Here's the story from CNN.
The New York Times is reporting tonight that President Trump ordered officials to give his son-in-law and his senior advisor, Jared Kushner, a top secret security clearance last year. Now, keep in mind that he did this even though intelligence officials and the top White House lawyer said that he shouldn't. It alarmed the then chief of staff, John Kelly, so much that he wrote an internal memo. And the memo was about how he had been, quote, ordered, this was the word he used, to give Kushner the top secret clearance. Then the White House counsel, Don McGahn, also wrote a memo detailing all the concerns that had been raised about giving Kushner the security clearance. So, but then, on top of it appears he lied about it. Here he is just last month, and his daughter echoing what he said just a couple weeks ago.
Tell General Kelly or anyone else in the White House
No, I don't think I have the authority to do that. I'm not sure I do, but I wouldn't do it. Jared's a good. I was never involved with his security.
Right.
I know that he, just from reading, I know that there was issues back and forth about security for numerous people actually, but I don't want to get involved in that stuff.
The president had no involvement pertaining to my clearance or my husband's clearance.
Uh-huh. Sure. And if you believe that, I've got, well, anyway, you get the idea. Matt Rosenberg is one of the reporters on the New York Times story. He elaborated.
What we were told is that, you know, Jared had numerous problems. They went back to the very beginning of the administration. Finally, last year, the president said, give him a security clearance, and that John Kelly understood it to be an order. He wrote a memo about it at that time. Yeah. In addition, Don McGahn, the White House counsel, wrote a memo outlining kind of the issues here. And yet, because the president definitely does have the authority to order somebody to be given a clearance, Mr. Kushner and Ivanka Trump both got their clearances.
Yeah. Now, as of today, Friday, both the House Intelligence and Oversight Committees are now investigating the White House's security clearance process. In fact, Elijah Cummings already issued a demand for all White House documents to be turned over, I believe, by March 4th, which would happen to be Monday. Stay tuned. So Michael Cohen wrapped up his 3 days of testimony on Capitol Hill yesterday after 7 hours in front of the House Intelligence Committee. He emerged from the hearing telling the press he'd be back again Wednesday for yet another round of questioning. The House Democrats, meanwhile, are ramping up their investigations. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff said their committee will hear from Felix Sater, as I mentioned before, the Russian-born business associate of Donald Trump's, who was involved, according to Michael Cohen, at least, in the Trump Tower Moscow deal, along with Cohen. The House Oversight Committee will now seek to interview several of the people that Cohen mentioned during his testimony on Wednesday, including the kids, yeah, Don Jr. and Ivanka. They also plan to bring in longtime Trump Organization CFO Alan Weisselberg, who last summer federal prosecutors granted immunity to testify in their investigation of Michael Cohen, although I did hear a report this morning that Weisselberg is not a cooperating witness, that he's not cooperating with the special counsel's office. So I don't know how much they're going to get out of him. We'll see. Now, while most eyes were focused on the Michael Cohen hearings and whatever that was that happened in Vietnam with Donald Trump and his boyfriend, Kim Jong-un, tensions heated up between the nuclear powers of India and Pakistan this week. To fill us in on what's going on over there, here's Nick Kristof from The New York Times.
The real risk of nuclear war in the last week did not involve North Korea. It involved India and Pakistan. And there was an incident in which a Pakistani terrorist group, Jaish-e Mohammed, blew up a bus with 40 paramilitaries in India and Kashmir that started hostilities that began escalating. And India is facing an election soon, so the prime minister was under great pressure. He then had airstrikes on Pakistan. We have two countries with nuclear weapons pointed at each other. When people do war games, they very quickly escalate into actually using those warheads. But today there's actually progress. Prime Minister Imran Khan of Pakistan, he has promised to release the Indian pilot who was shot down. And I think that that is actually going to be a way to de-escalate this. I think a lot of people were really concerned that this was just going to escalate and escalate and could be very, very scary. And I think now we can foresee a path out of this, you know, but with a caveat that it is still absolutely
scary.
Outrageous for Pakistan to provide a base for groups like Jaish-e Mohammed that engage in these kind of terrorist activities. And I hope Pakistan does indeed try to rectify that broader problem.
Well, they did return the pilot who was shot down. So at least the tensions have been eased at least a little bit. But that's definitely something to keep an eye on. Yesterday, for the second day in a row, the democratically led House of Representatives passed legislation toughening the background check system for gun purchases. The bill, which was passed on a largely party-line vote of 228 to 198, would increase from 3 days to at least 10 the number of days a seller has to wait for a response from the system before transferring a firearm. This is the Charleston loophole after the shooting at the AME church, where the killer, whose name I'm not going to say, was able to purchase a gun because the waiting period was only 3 days, where if they had been forced to wait out the 10 days, the results would have come back that he was ineligible to purchase a gun because of his record. So that Charleston loophole passed. Unfortunately, like the bill the House passed on Wednesday to extend background checks to private transactions at gun shows and over the internet, the bill passed yesterday is also unlikely to be voted on by the Senate. That's because the Republicans control the Senate, and Mitch McConnell just will not bring them up for a vote. So although the House passed them, they will die waiting to come to the floor in the Senate. All the more reason why the Democrats need to flip the Senate in 2020. Even if by some miracle the bills were voted on by the Senate and passed, Donald Trump has threatened to veto them if they were to reach his desk. Another reason to show that we need to take, Democrats need to take back the White House in 2020 as well. Now, there may be some controversy over whether or not a sitting president can be indicted. Actually, if you study the issue, it was just an opinion that wasn't meant to, it wasn't like a Supreme Court decision that ruled that a sitting president can't be indicted. It was a rule that some committee came up with during the Watergate days that wasn't meant to set precedent. So, this is something that will I think perhaps be litigated over the next 2 years. It should be. But so as much as things are uncertain about that over here in Israel, apparently a sitting prime minister can be indicted.
Israel's prime minister appeared to choke up, defending himself against charges he says were cooked up by his enemies. They're spilling my wife's blood. They're persecuting my sons. They brought my family through the seven circles of hell, he said. Just hours earlier, the attorney general announced he plans to indict Netanyahu for fraud, bribery, and breach of trust. Police accused Netanyahu of accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in gifts, including cigars, champagne, jewelry, and flattering media coverage in exchange for backing legislation to help wealthy businessmen. President Trump, an ardent supporter, defended Netanyahu.
That I can say this, that he's done a great job as prime minister. He's tough, he's smart, he's strong.
But how strong will now be tested with elections in just 40 days?
If the case goes ahead, Netanyahu would be the first sitting Israeli prime minister to be indicted.
So there's that. Maybe we should follow suit. Now, the fallout continues over Donald Trump's comments siding with Kim Jong-un over the death of Otto Warmbier. This was Trump, sorry to assault your ears, during his press conference the other morning in Vietnam.
What happened is horrible. I really believe something very bad happened to him, and I don't think that the top leadership knew about it. I did speak about it, and I don't believe that he would have allowed that to happen. It just wasn't to his advantage to allow that to happen. Those prisons are rough. They're rough places, and bad things happened. But I really don't believe that he was... I don't believe he knew about it.
Did Kim Jong-un tell you...
He felt badly about it. I did speak to him. He felt very badly. But he knew the case very well, but he knew it later. And... You know, you got a lot of people, a big country, a lot of people.
Big country, a lot of people.
In those camps,
a lot of people. A lot of people in those camps.
Some really bad things happened to Otto.
Yeah.
Some really, really bad things.
Why are you
undercover? But he tells me that he didn't know about it, and I will take him at his word.
And I will take him at his word. Okay, so it's not only people like you and I who are outraged over that. The outrage is, coming from his side of the aisle as well. And then... there are the parents of Otto Warmbier, who Donald Trump trotted out at last year's State of the Union address, or his address to a joint session of Congress, which is how it works in the first year of a president's term. He trotted them out and acted and it befriended them. Well, they issued a statement today. And it reads, quote, "We have been respectful during the summit process. Now we must speak out. Kim and his evil regime are responsible for the death of our son, Otto. Kim and his evil regime are responsible for unimaginable cruelty and inhumanity. No excuses or lavish praise can change that." And so while this country and probably most of the civilized world was reeling at the fact that the president of the United States is siding with the North Korean brutal dictator over, you know, killing of an American citizen, a student who was in North Korea. Fox aired an interview that Sean Hannity taped with Donald Trump in Vietnam. And I just pulled out some of the ways that Trump described Kim Jong-un.
We get along really well. He's a different kind of a guy. And he's a character.
He was laughing a lot.
And he's a real personality, and he's very smart. He's sharp as you can be.
Oh, my God. He's a real leader?
He's pretty mercurial.
Oh, my God.
I don't say that necessarily in a bad way. But
no, of course not. You wouldn't say anything bad about him.
The relationship is very good. He likes me. I like him. Some people say, oh, you shouldn't like him. I said, why shouldn't I like him? I like him. Get along great. We'll see what happens.
Oh, my God. I like him. We get along great. Wow. Can you say traitor? I don't know that there's any other way to put it. I think, you know, I was going to play the world's biggest asshole jingle for Donald Trump, but this fits better. Unreal. Anyway, so that happened. Meanwhile, today, breaking news, the Pentagon announced that they have canceled the annual large-scale war games with South Korea. The news follows that summit in Vietnam where Trump called the military exercises very expensive. As I saw someone tweet, why not just surrender to North Korea now? Unbelievable. There's other news going on. Washington Governor Jay Inslee this morning announced he's running for president.
I'm Jay Inslee, and I'm running for president because I'm the only candidate who will make defeating climate change our nation's number one priority. We can do this. Join our movement. This is our moment.
This is our moment.
And his entire campaign is on the issue of climate change, which is a good thing, although one issue candidates don't ever win. And what I know from reading Howie Klein on Twitter this morning is Jay Inslee, as a member of Congress, was a new Dem. He wasn't even remotely progressive, but at least he's got a handle on the right issue here. And then finally, as I sort of mentioned earlier, the annual gathering of the right-wing nutjobs is in full swing. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is underway in Maryland. It runs, I guess, through tomorrow. I honestly don't understand. I saw the guy who does the afternoon shift on the Progressive Channel on Sirius XM, Michelangelo Signorelli, is broadcasting live from there. Why? It's a hate fest. If you look at any of the coverage, it's stunning. The main target of their ire this year appears to be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They've got panels. And it's funny. If you want some good comedy reading, pull up the CPAC website. It's probably cpac.org. And look at the description of their panels and speeches. They've got a couple like AOC's Green New Deal, debunking the climate alarmism behind bringing full socialism to America. That's one of them. Here's another one. How the left does it. Money, people, technology, and how they sell socialism with a smile. Yeah, they're ratcheting up the socialism scare rhetoric. It's just what you would expect of them. All right. As I said, Digby's coming up. I'll tell you what, I'll rest my throat. I'll take a few sips of something cold. And we'll check in with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report and come back with Digby next. It's the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So summer in February, apparently it's hotter than Mexico.
Britain basks in warmest February ever recorded. House Democrats unleash wave of oversight on climate, energy, and the environment. a turning point for solar power in Arizona. Plus,
there are big issues, and I think Republicans feel like the nation is shifting, the electorate is shifting, and they have to come up with an answer that's more than don't know, don't believe it, it's something else that's going on.
Republicans begin shifting away from outright climate change denial.
All of those shifty characters and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Half of Americans say the science is more convincing than it was 5 years ago, which is f***ing stupid, but I'll take it.
Taking whatever we can get right now, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I love listening to some of those reports out of Great Britain talking about what a lovely day it is today.
Yes, the British are enjoying their hottest February weather on record
but
this
week.
But
maybe they shouldn't be enjoying it quite so much.
Well, you know, it's nearly 70 degrees in London, and that's pretty summer-like weather. And it did break the all-time high February temperature ever recorded in hundreds of years of record-keeping. The summer-like weather comes exactly 1 year to the day after Britain was slammed with record cold and snow in that so-called Beast from the East storm. The UK is now headed to its warmest February on record.
It's almost like something strange is going on with our climate for some reason.
Yes, but a new study suggests that the increase in extreme temperatures probably won't be a spur to people demanding action on climate change because they're adjusting to it. In a survey of social media published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, researchers found that people learn to accept extreme weather as normal within as little as 2 years. It's known as shifting baselines syndrome. Future generations, therefore, won't feel their climate is unusual, and that could lead people to underestimate the extent of global warming.
Well, it's nice to go out and play golf in February, after all.
Meanwhile, in U.S. politics, majority House Democrats are making up for lost time after years of Republican rule. They're holding several hearings this week focusing on the environment, like grilling the Trump EPA's top enforcement official over the significant decline in inspections and fines of polluters. An analysis of EPA's own data shows that inspections of industrial facilities and fines for violators are at a 10-year low.
In the most unsurprising news of the day.
And the House Transportation Committee examined how upgrading the nation's infrastructure can help communities mitigate and adapt to climate change impacts. However, Republicans in the House Natural Resources Committee walked out of a hearing on climate change denial that focused on the millions of dollars in funding that the climate change denial industry and certain politicians have received from the fossil fuel industry to cast doubt on climate science for decades.
Why did they walk out?
They claimed that it was outside of the committee's purview.
To talk about climate change.
They talk about climate change denial.
In what committee?
House Natural Resources.
Huh.
The House Democrats continued the hearing anyway as a forum. But some Republican politicians are shifting away from outright denial in the wake of public polling showing more Americans than ever are concerned about man-made climate change and other polls showing overwhelming support for the elements of a Green New Deal to create millions of jobs by addressing and preparing for climate change impact.
By the way, support for the Green New Deal is more than 80% of Americans cross all party lines.
And that was not lost on former Ohio Governor John Kasich, who told Axios.com, quote, "Let's have conservatives have a discussion instead of being in denial that this is a problem. You can't just be a climate science denier." And Politico reporter Jake Sherman on MSNBC also noted the shift among Republicans.
More and more Republicans believe that their position is untenable when it comes to climate change. And I don't mean that they're suddenly having a come to Jesus moment about climate science and about changing their views on climate science. But I think a lot of Republicans that I've spoken to say they need to have some sort of answer about the massive changes that we all see in the environment besides saying, no, they're not happening.
Right. Americans are tired of their old BS. So the Republicans need to come up with some all new BS.
Finally, some very big news, a historic shift in Arizona. After years of fighting the spread of solar energy in Arizona, the state's monopoly electric utility, Arizona Public Service, says it will now spend hundreds of millions of dollars to build utility-scale battery farms and solar farms to add to its electric grid because batteries are rapidly becoming the cheapest energy option. They'll replace traditional power plants, including natural gas-fired generation.
Well, take your time moving to solar in Arizona. For much more on all of these reports and the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You might as well be walking on the sun.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Ah. All right, welcome back. Nicole Sandler here. She's been blogging longer than most at digbysblog.blogspot.com, and these days she also writes at salon.com. Heather Digby Parton, no one I can imagine talking to about this crazy week that I'd rather talk to. Hey, Digby, sorry. I woke up this morning with whatever is going around. I woke up with just like a killer headache and a sore throat, and I think it's infiltrated my brain too. So at least the weekend
I'm
is
sorry
here.
To hear that.
Yeah.
Hydrate.
Yes, I am. I'll drink. But as I was trying so uneloquently to say, after a week like this, I couldn't think of anyone I'd rather talk about it with to wrap it up than you. And you have a great piece up, of course, on your blog and at salon.com about today, Michael Cohen and the Trump cult. I really think that that Wednesday's hearing with Michael Cohen is a day that historians are going to be talking about years from now, and I hope so anyway.
Oh, I agree. I mean, first of all, just think of the change. I mean, there are so many scandals surrounding the Trump administration and Donald Trump and the Trump Organization and his family and this and the whole Russia mess. And imagine any other time in history that you wouldn't have had public hearings going on almost from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has always been, to me, the most telling aspect of the, the tremendous kind of capitulation by the Congress as an independent entity, an equal branch of government, and, of course, the Republican Party. Because even I would have even expected the Republicans to have run some kangaroo, kind of committee hearings, just to pretend like they actually
in the
gave
Senate,
them, right?
Right.
Yeah, in the Senate or in the House. I mean, either one, just to do something, call up some of these people and, have it all, planned out in advance and just to pretend like there was some oversight on this. And they didn't even try to do that. In fact, they went out of their way to do the opposite. They completely obstructed any kind of congressional oversight, any kind of investigations for 2 years. So, we haven't had what would normally have been assumed. These scandals have unfolded all through sort of anonymous sourcing in the press and some legal documents that have been filed in a couple of trials with Paul Manafort, for instance, and, some guilty pleas, which is where we've gotten our information about what we know about the Trump administration. So things have changed. And clearly, and I was saying this before the election, just going, if nothing else happens, the Democrats have got to take control of one house of Congress so that we can have public hearings.
Right.
And I think that the Michael Cohen hearing on Wednesday, which was a great sort of opening act of this whole new era that we're in was it was showed exactly why it's so important. It is, you have to see these people, you have to hear them, you have people, the public has a right to see them speak about these things to them. I mean, look, human beings, we don't make our sort of judgments about other humans purely based on, you know, what they say or what we read that they have said, right? I mean,
right.
We're very sophisticated machines, we humans, and we make our judgments based upon sort of a lot of subliminal and heuristic sort of signals that we get. And so we need to see them, and you need to see them challenged on both sides. I mean, it's fine, the Republicans revealed themselves too, and we can talk about that as well. But, you know, the Democrats were there, they were asking questions. I mean, you know, some asked great questions,
yep.
Others sort of did a little grandstanding, but
yep.
Whatever. I mean, they did, it was seriously undertaken. I think they treated him with respect, they treated each other with respect, and they even treated the Republicans with respect, which they didn't deserve. But, you know, that moment, that day, it introduced a new era within this Trump era, and it was extremely important because of that alone. And then, you know, obviously the specifics of what was said and how the Republicans reacted to it, you know, it is going to spawn. They've already announced that testimony has now spawned at least half a dozen other hearings
and
investigations.
Yeah, and I can't wait for them.
It's a big deal.
Right,
yeah.
It is a big deal. There were a couple of things that I saw you pointed out in your pieces that I don't think got as much attention, the things that Michael Cohen said, as they should have. For instance, this one really just, it was like an icicle through my heart.
Whoop. Spirit's working for Mr. Trump.
There we go.
I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power.
Ouch.
And this is why I agreed to appear before you today.
That when I heard that, the ouch you heard was because I was recording live when it was going on. That was my spur of the moment comment. Okay, oh shit! But that's actually a sentiment that I've heard other people say. Obviously, it's nothing we can predict, but knowing this president, that's a real fear, especially hearing all these Republican pundits and such talking about, you know, a civil war. That we're
right.
On the verge of a civil war, or we're already in a civil war. And who was it? One of them said, that's why I buy guns.
Yeah, it was Joe DiGenova.
That's right. Who Trump almost brought in as one of his attorneys in the White
exactly.
House. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, this actually, it's. I'm glad you brought that up, because it leads to something that I've sort of been thinking for a while now. And maybe it's a wild theory, I don't know. But you're right. They have been talking about civil war. And remember, Trump was saying this before 2016 in anticipation of losing. You know, he was saying, you know, they asked him in the debate, will you recognize the results of the election?
Right.
He said, I'll let you know. And then he said on the trail, yes, I will, as long as I win.
Yeah.
I mean, he was leading up to that the whole time, the whole rigged election, all that stuff was part of his thing. And the, you know, the massive voter fraud, the Republicans have been leading up to that part for years. So this is not this is something that's been in the ether for a while. And what my kind of crackpot theory on this is that I had always wondered if the Trump-Russia thing, if there had been some kind of an agreement, what did the Russians hope to gain from Donald Trump if he lost?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly we know what they wanted if he won. They wanted the sanctions lifted, and they wanted him to, you know, just, you know, rail against NATO and, you know, just disrupt things in a way that would be beneficial to them. But I didn't get really what he would do for them, other than just create chaos and you know, cause a lot of trouble, what he would do for them in return for their help if he lost. And I think that was it. I think what they wanted from him was to contest the results of the election. And I think that's the only thing that makes sense to me, that this, and that would go with their chaos, you know, campaign anyway, right? I mean, this would just be disrupt the election, disrupt the proceedings, do not do a peaceful handover as we understand it. And I'm not assuming that they meant for violence to ensue, although obviously that's a possibility considering the followers of Donald Trump. But I think that may be what their expectation was. And by the way, Trump has been starting to say this stuff himself again. which is, you know, he's saying that, that this is what Democrats do because they can't win the election legitimately. He's been tweeting that. So I hear the echoes of 2016.
Wow.
I hear the echoes of, you know, this going way back with the voter fraud and all the rest of it, that this is part of a sort of Republican and theoretically anyway, possibly a, you know, part of the whole Russian campaign to basically destroy American democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how else you can look at something like that.
I don't either, and I think that's a really good observation. Of course, we're speaking with Digby, who always makes good observations. And then when you think about what happened this week with the summit in Vietnam with Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump is proving himself to be not only a horrible negotiator, but so totally oblivious to the world's history and norms, and just the praise that he's heaped on Kim Jong-un is just astounding.
Well,
even after this thing failed, he still, you know, says it was an honor to meet with him, and I take him at his word on he didn't know about Otto Warmbier, and I mean just everything. It makes me wonder what the North Koreans have on him.
Well, I think they've got his number.
Yeah,
whether they have anything specific, I don't know, but they certainly have his number. They understand that he's an extreme, you know, he's just unbelievably shallow, and he doesn't have any understanding of how any of this works. He thinks it's all, the framework for his worldview is entirely about doing some real estate deal.
Yeah.
Or signing a licensing agreement for cheap ties and bad vodka. I mean, that is all he knows. It's the only way that's the only, you know, sort of frame of reference that he has.
Uh-huh.
So he doesn't look at Kim Jong-un and see what Kim Jong-un really is. Now, I'm not saying that Kim Jong-un doesn't want to open up his country in some way to economic development, but that is not what he's about.
Right.
He is making, what he's doing is trying to create a rift and an alliance with China. You know, there is an emerging Asian sort of hegemony that is happening, and in this big sort of, you know, world, you know, a foreign, you know, the big chess pieces on the world map. Sorry, my articulation is a little bit lacking today. But in any case, you know, he has a worldview that is very, very different than Donald Trump's, and he has a different set of goals. And Donald Trump has no way of understanding that. He's completely, unschooled in any kind of world history, in any kind of foreign policy, any kind of, you know, he said it during the campaign, you'll recall. He said, well, I watch the generals on TV. I mean, that
yep.
was his,
uh-huh.
that's what he knows.
Yep.
So he doesn't read books, he doesn't, you know, and apparently he must have been pretty bad in school since he had, you know, Michael Cohen write nasty letters to all of his schools and threatening them if they let out any of his grades to the public. So, you know, it's pretty clear, and I think anybody who observes him can see that he's not the brightest light. The problem is that, you know, that would be okay. You know, we've had dumb presidents before. George W. Bush was not exactly what you'd call Menzo.
No.
But normally they do have some, you know, kind of instinctive ability to understand what they don't, that they don't know things.
Right.
And kind of, you know, they will, for better or worse, in Bush's case worse since he enabled Cheney, but they do put things in the hands of people who do know those things and allow them to take the lead. I think what happened in North Korea, and I'm not quite sure, you know, we'll find out someday, maybe not even that long.
Mm-hmm.
People are writing books left and right.
Yeah.
But what happened there? But I got the sense, I happened to be awake. I'm on the West Coast, so it was a little bit earlier than it was for you guys.
Yep.
When he gave his press conference.
Yeah.
And I noticed that he was laying a lot of the blame on Pompeo for this failing. Now, he did say, I just couldn't do that. I was against doing that. And Mike was really against doing that. And then he had Pompeo come up and talk, which is unusual for Trump. Doesn't do that.
Right.
In those kind of situations, he likes to hold the stage. He had Pompeo come up and explain things. And I just got this sense, and maybe I'm wrong, that, you know, this is going to be, you know how he is. He turns on everybody.
Yep.
That he will turn on Pompeo
yep.
and blame him for the failure of that summit, because I actually think he truly believes that he and Kim Jong-un are good friends.
Yeah.
And he believes Kim Jong-un is nice to him. He flatters him. He sends him those beautiful letters, you know. So he, of course, it must be that he really likes me. He likes me. And so I think he truly believes that.
They fell in love.
You can see how hard it was for him to say anything against him. And when confronted on the Otto Warmbier thing, which was just odious what he said. I mean, absolutely disgusting. And you know what that they're talking about, how he said, well, I know Kim Jong-un didn't really know about it. He told me that he didn't. I'm going to take it as his word. But you know what else he said? And I actually put it up as a quote of the day on the blog. He said, people keep saying that I shouldn't like him.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't I like him? Well, you know, maybe because he's a murderous dictator? I mean, the guy is the worst person in the world. I mean, I'm serious. There's really, who is worse than Kim Jong-un? He's as bad as it gets. I mean, he offed his half-brother in an airport not a year ago.
Well,
he's an absolute tyrant. He's the lowest of the low. And I get why a president might have to deal with them. If he has nuclear material, there's no getting around it. You know, I mean, a president going to talk to him is not, in my view, a completely terrible thing to do. But to say, why shouldn't I like him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my God.
Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, and this brings to mind a story that just broke a few days ago that the FBI is dismantling its war crimes unit. That investigates war crimes and suspected torturers and perpetrators of genocide. They're dismantling that unit, all under Donald Trump, because he likes, these are the world so-called leaders that he sidles up to: Kim Jong Un, Duterte, Putin, what's his name in Turkey?
MBS.
I mean, these are the, and he disses our allies. You've got to wonder what, you know, the question to Sarah Palin about the Obama doctrine, and she didn't know. Well, I'd like to know what the Trump doctrine is. The Trump foreign policy doctrine.
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Because people are very confused about this. I mean, if we want to get, you know, deep into this, I mean, look at Venezuela.
Yep.
He was revealed by Andrew McCabe and others who said that from the very beginning, he was asking, why can't we invade in Venezuela?
Yep.
Now, we know that, you know, in the campaign, he said, you know, it's not like he hid any of this stuff. He's too stupid to hide things. But you have to actually pay attention to what he's saying in order to understand him. He said during the campaign, they asked, you know, to the victors go the spoils. What would you do? What would you have done about Iraq? I would have bombed the shit out of them and taken the oil. Well, so when you look at Venezuela, that's exactly what he sees, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
he sees that as an opportunity.
Yes, he wants the oil.
He is an imperialist. He is just a crass kind of old-fashioned 1890s-style imperialist who believes that the United States got this, you know, they've got something I want. I'm going to take it. You know, he doesn't see anything. You know, luckily, he doesn't have a lot of imagination, so he doesn't understand the way that the global, you know, the global economy really works, and he doesn't get that a lot of the things that might be valuable are actually valuable, or else he'd be invading all over the place.
Right. No.
But you know, for him, that is it. You know, it's all sort of a mercantilism, a con game, and a kind of a, you know, just an aggressive sort of acquisition of whatever it is he wants. And it's not a win-win situation for him. It's always got to be a zero-sum game. You know, they lose, I win. You
right.
know, it's, I want it, I'll take it. So, you know, when you look at him in that sense, and then you see, you know, what he's done in the Middle East, which has been very confusing, and backing out of the Iran deal, and, you know, going back and forth on Syria the way that he's done, his deep devotion to Israel for reasons that, you know, are difficult to fathom other mm-hmm. than just, you know, purely political reasons. You know, the Trump doctrine is just simply incoherent.
Yeah,
it is, you know, whatever he has a feeling for on any given minute. And, you know, you combine that with his love of strongmen, And it makes for a very scary thing. We're just lucky that he is as incompetent and stupid as he is, because if he were halfway intelligent and wanted to do some of these things, I think the one thing that we've seen in this Trump administration so far, and it must be rectified, is that the president has been given way, way too much power.
No
and
kidding.
He has just like this Kushner thing.
Yes, that's what I was going to just bring up.
How in the world can it be?
So the New York Times did an interview with Donald Trump on January 17th. And here's the audio. It was for print, but they had tape running. And here's one question that was specifically asked by Maggie Haberman about clearance for Jared.
There's been a story in the news in the last 2 weeks about your son-in-law's security clearance.
Yeah.
Tell General Kelly or anyone else in the White House to overrule security officials, the career.
No, I don't think I have the authority to do that. I'm not sure I do, but I wouldn't do it. Jared's a good. I was never involved with the security.
Oh my God!
I know that he. You know, just from reading, I know that
from
there
reading.
Was
he doesn't
issues
read.
Back and forth about security for numerous people actually, but I don't. Want to get involved in that stuff.
He just lies with such impunity. So today, the New York Times, or last night, reporting, confirming that Donald Trump ordered his then chief of staff, John Kelly, to give Jared Kushner a top secret security clearance, despite serious concerns by everybody else in the administration, basically. And John Kelly wrote this contemporaneous memo, basically, I wish I could find it here. I had it before, like in all caps, do not give Jared Kushner security clearance. He can't be trusted.
Oh, my God. I mean, can you believe that? And you know, it's easy to sort of, I mean, I can come up with half a dozen sort of nefarious reasons why both Donald Trump and Jared Kushner would want that. And they all seem plausible, considering that Jared's over in the Middle East right now, ostensibly doing a, quote, Middle East peace deal, you know, having private conversations with authoritarian despots.
Amazing.
In, you know, in Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And, you know, I mean, this is unbelievable that he was... that he did this and that he lied. So, and Ivanka did too. You've seen the tape.
I'm
just going, no, there was nothing like that.
Nothing like
and,
that.
And, you know, it's what it brings up to me that something that I think I mentioned to you before, maybe not, but maybe it was somebody else. But Donald Trump has this tell when he's lying about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no. Yeah. I don't know what
you're talking about. Low-key,
you know,
very low-key, very quiet.
No, that's,
right.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's just kind of, oh, well, that's mm-hmm. that's weird. Huh, that's funny. I never did that. I mean, did that with the Stormy Daniels thing on Air Force
that's right.
One, remember when they
yep.
asked him. That interview with the New York Times, everybody should go back and listen to the whole thing, because he does it a bunch of times in that interview. He asked about, you know, they asked him about the SDNY, you know, have you talked to anybody about that SDNY? Oh,
I don't know.
Huh? SDNY, what's that? You know. He gets this certain sound in his voice about certain things, and it's very obvious in that
mm-hmm.
interview. There were a couple of other ones.
Yeah,
too.
I'm going to have to go through and see if I can't pull some. Maybe when I'm sick this weekend home, I can spend some time going through some audio. You know, and I need to correct something I said yesterday, by the way. I was talking about the SDNY and how Donald Trump, you know, is more in danger of charges brought in New York than probably from the special counsel, because he can't pardon himself for state charges. SDNY is federal, but the New York Attorney General, the new Attorney General name is Tish James, I believe. She's already making mm-hmm. a lot of noises about, you know, bringing state charges within New York on a lot of these issues.
And they've already announced that they're going to bring charges against Manafort, meaning that the pardon that Trump and that Manafort is clearly angling for from Trump is not going to do him a whole lot of good. And you know, a lot of those charges, state charges, local, I mean, you know, Trump's from New York, and he did a lot of dirty deeds over the years, as Michael Cohen called them, dirty deeds. And so he's vulnerable on that stuff. And, you know, I'm not sure that I agree that his greatest... you know, the greatest threat to him is from that New York office. I think it's a huge threat, and I think it may very well be the thing that lands him in jail, if such a thing could happen in the United States, after he is either impeached or loses the election. But I think the Mueller investigation, I am convinced by, you know, the close readings of people like Marcy Wheeler, that there is more to it than what we know, and that is a narrative out there that is extremely damaging. Now, what I don't know, of course, is whether, you know, Trump is just an idiot who went along with all this stuff without realizing that he had just compromised the national security of the United States, or whether or not he wittingly went along just because, you know, he just did. I mean, I don't know that.
I don't know either.
Any more than that. But I do believe it's a tremendous threat to him. I think it's a tremendous threat to the Republican Party, which has just basically thrown itself in. And it's one thing I did want to mention about the Cohen testimony that we talked about in the beginning, is that, you know, Cohen did something I think that was very, I found it, that clip that you played was very chilling.
Mm-hmm.
About the potential for Trump to not accept the peaceful transfer of power.
Right.
But Cohen did something I think that I haven't seen anybody else do, and it was very impressive to me, was he was sitting there. He looked right at those Republicans.
Yep.
All of them sitting there, just absolute, just submissive toadies, every last one of them, accomplices and enablers of this insane administration. And he looked right at them, and he said, you know, he basically said, I know you, because I was you.
I have it right here. Here we go. I'm queuing in the middle because the clip I pulled is really long, but here we go.
Really unbecoming of Congress. It's that sort of behavior that I'm responsible for. I'm responsible for your silliness because I did the same thing that you're doing now for 10 years. I protected Mr. Trump for 10 years. And the fact that you pull up a news article that has no value to it, and you want to use that as the premise for discrediting me, that I'm not the person that people called at 3 o'clock in the morning, would make you inaccurate. In actuality, it would make you a liar, which puts you into the same position that I am in. And I can only warn people, the more people that follow Mr. Trump, as I did blindly, are going to suffer the same consequences that I'm suffering.
Yep. Basically, you reap what you sow. You keep going down this road, you're going to wind up in the same mess that I'm in.
Well, exactly. And what he sounded like to me was someone who had been deprogrammed, you know, former cult member who had been deprogrammed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that kind of weird clarity that those people get. You know, I don't know about you, but yeah, I've been watching the Scientology thing with Leah Remini on A&E and various other sort of these cults.
Right.
And you see that same sort of thing where they've had their eyes open and they look back on their own behavior and go, oh my God, you know, what in the world was I thinking? I was blind. And he said that. He used words that I thought were very evocative. He said, I blindly followed Mr. Trump, and I was mesmerized by him. And it just said to me, you know, that the Republicans in Congress, of course, are the worst because, you know, they're much more informed. They're much more cynical about it. They have their reasons that go beyond just being mesmerized by Trump. But they are part of it. They're the lieutenants of the cult leader. And all those people out in the country who follow Trump, that this cult of personality that he has developed, Michael Cohen was a canary in the coal mine to all those people. Look at him and see what happened to him. This guy was one of his most loyal lieutenants who did everything he wanted him to do. And when he got in trouble, and when he got, you know, he was thrown to the wolves by Trump for doing all those things for him. And then once he got away from it and got out of his influence, out of his, you know,
the immediate circle,
and suddenly he was confronted with the fact that he had lost himself. He'd lost himself. And, you know, and I actually believe that Cohen thinks that's true. He's paying a huge price for what he did, and he's going to go to jail, and he's lost everything. His life
everything.
Is over as he knew it.
Yep.
And so that I thought that was a very telling moment, and maybe it was, you know, starting to be the beginning of something deeper, kind of reaching into this Trump, this mesmerized Trump cult in some way. And, you know, I don't, obviously, you know, Fox News, they barely even showed that.
Nothing.
But nonetheless, you know, it's an important moment. I agree with you that, you know, this was one of those times we will look back on it. That testimony will be seen in, you know, in sort of staticky old news clips.
That's right.
Years from now, for sure.
Oh, boy. It is a week that, yes, we will continue to look back on. And who knows what the next week is going to bring. Just imagine the possibilities. Digby, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for helping us wrap up this week. Find Digby on Twitter at Digby56. Of course, her blog at digbysblog.blogspot.com and at salon.com. Thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you. I really appreciate
your
time.
My pleasure, Nicole.
All right.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. The awesome Digby, everybody. With that, we've come to the end of another week. Oh, what a week it was. I don't know that we can take many more of these. And it wouldn't be wonderful if we didn't have to. All right. With that, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back here on Tuesday. Be good to yourself.